Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. I hope you're about as excited as I am with all of the good news and so forth. And some of this good news, I'm going to trickle it to you, but I will tell you that what we've got going on in Wyoming is, I would just say it's a miracle or it's just short of a miracle. But anyway, in the grand scheme of things of what I've been doing and how I've been engaging, I could not imagine the successes that we're having. And so we'll get into a lot of those details later. I don't want to cover that today, but I just wanted to tell you that there is good news. We're getting wind in our sails, even without the support that we're hoping to get, or the support that I've been groveling for. So forgive me, I may be a little tongue-tied today. It's probably because I'm just running on empty. I've been working a lot around the clock, and so I'm really tired. So again, forgive me. You are listening to the only show that is providing you the constitutional process. And folks, this isn't about GR. This is not about me trying to become rich or anything. This is literally an effort that people are joining in trying to save our individual liberty and our individual sovereignty. Those people that are going to be in the fray, they are the Thomas Jeffersons, Rufus Kings, you know, James Madisons, you know, the reframers is what I've referred to them before. They are those heroes for the current and for historical purposes. So again, it is not about me. It is about these people taking this and moving it forward. This show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. And the number to call in today, our number for today is 215-867-8255 or 215-TOP-TALK. I do want to get into the Trump pep squad and the Trump what do you want to call it, the peanut gallery of those who are criticizing Trump. And I'm not talking about the secular progressives, because those people have been trying to take Trump down in all sorts of ways. We'll get into that. But before we do, I owe it to you to at least try to grovel, or maybe I owe it to myself. I have a scheduled date to get out to Wyoming, and we need your help. We need to at least pay for the last trip so that I can, you know, make it out there. We were looking at the cost of flying, and with the type of materials and everything else that I need to take, it looks like I will probably just go down the path of driving out there again. It'll actually save us money in the long run, and it'll be a lot more effort. But bottom line is, all of the camera and computers and all of the gear that I've got to take, well, you know how the airlines are. They like to fleece you for every bag and so forth. And so the cost is, I just see it as so prohibitive. Unless we can get some help, unless we can get some support, we've got to do this on a zero budget or as much of a shoestring budget as we can get away with. So again, you know, I humbly need your support. You can go to the GoFundMe. You just go to reclaimingtherepublic.org right there on the homepage. I have a link to the campaign. You can contribute there. I would humbly and gratefully appreciate what you can help us with. And if you can't help that way, please start getting involved. There are real heroes that are starting to step up. I am absolutely overwhelmed at how this is being embraced and taken and moved forward. There's no doubt in my mind. This, it, as simple as it seems, that is that's precisely what the framers gave us, or I should say the good Lord instilled in the ideas that he inspired into the framers. They gave us everything we need to literally have a revolution without having to fire a shot, because the Constitution is put into a framework of a compact, not some charter, not some general constitution that gives all powers to the government. No, we were endowed and bestowed upon us by the divine hand of providence a defined and limited constitution that delegated very, very specific powers to the general government. It's the same thing with our state constitutions. I've yet to see a state constitution that just read a couple of lines that said, you know, the state government has all the powers necessary to, that the people are willing to put up with. I mean, you won't find that kind of candor and honesty in a constitution for politicians, or at least for a politician to put that out there to say, you're going to give us the keys to, you know, your kingdom? Come on, please. Anyway, let me thank you before I go too much further in listening and actually putting up with my bad humor. I'm constantly reminded that I'm really probably the only one that thinks I'm funny. So thank you for your patience and putting up with me. But I, more importantly, thank you for helping the show grow, and thank you for getting the word out. You may want to start telling people you need to start tuning in, because I am going to start exposing a little early than what I wanted to do, but it just seems like we are already in that position. Now, I hate to do this because I think that there's going to be people, because people are susceptible, right? There's people that could be involved in doing good things and they can be attacked. They can be undermined. What ends up happening with the KGB, the way they compromise people, is they find out what your weaknesses are and they tempt you with those. And next thing you know, they got pictures of you with the things you shouldn't be doing. And next thing you know, that person has to resign. And there's no doubt in my mind the reason why we had so many Republicans resign their positions out of Congress this last election cycle was because they, too many of them, or a lot of them, were compromised, or they knew they had been compromised. They knew they'd compromised themselves, and it's far better to just go out on your own than to have to face the potential of being exposed in the election process. And in doing so, I believe they were rewarded by the deep state, the players involved in all of that, because it made it very possible for the Democrats to take these open seats instead of those people actually campaigning and supporting, you know, a really good conservative or what have you. They just went away. And that just shows you how deeply these people have been compromised. We're going to talk about the deep state today. You're going to want to stay tuned, because we've got a lot of really good let's just say speculation, information, or what have you, coming down the pipe. Now, let me kind of get into, before we go to break, what I was talking about regarding the Trump pep squad. Now, do you know anybody that's out there that just, you know, anything that Trump does, isn't that the greatest? He's the most brilliant mind. I mean, I'm not here to criticize or anything else, but there are people that reach these fanatical points where, you know, they don't recognize the human nature of people. These guys aren't perfect. It's not like Trump is Christ, but there are people that get that fanatical. There are people that were that fanatical about Obama, and there are people that are that fanatical about Trump as well. And so I've had some conversations with some of them, and it's really hard to try to have an objective conversation when, you know, I don't want to get into the position where I make them think like I'm attacking Trump, but I'm just trying to be honest here and say, you know, we have a constitution, and even though nobody has been following it for centuries, it would be nice to see somebody finally following it. And shouldn't we all be at least in that position of wanting our current president to follow the Constitution? Anywho, but hey, we got Trump and he's doing great things. And anyway, it's just, I'm not bald yet, but I'm pulling my hair out. And so there are those that just think that the sun shines, you know, from the epidermis of our president. And I actually, in all honesty, I tell people all the time, you've got to be thankful. We could have had the despot Hagtop Hillary as our president. We better be very magnanimous with the extra time that we've been given in trying to actually get movement in taking the Constitution back. We are very close to being pushed off the precipice, and there are lots of players that are not happy with what Trump is doing because he's not playing their game. So there are those that are really fanatical, and then there's those Republicans who have been nothing but obstructionists. Some of those people stepped out of Congress, but there are plenty of obstructionists out there as well. I'd like to call them the Never Trumpers, but I don't know. I mean, some of these obstructionists realize that it is a bad juju. It doesn't bode well to actually buck. You know, they kind of follow that adage of you never say, you know, bad things about another Republican. And so, you know, there's those people out there that are walking that thin line. They're obstructionists, but they're not champions for the Constitution, nor they're champions for Trump. And we'll get into that when we come right back. It's important to understand who and what they're championing for. And so we'll be right back after a couple of sponsors. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. So where was I? So I was talking about these Republican obstructionists. And I seem to be kind of like dancing around the bush or maybe going around the woodshed here. What I am, I'll tell you up front. I just want to give you the evidence to show you how the conservatives, the Republicans, those who love liberty, how not necessarily divided, but how we're not united. There, because we have this free agency, we have this concept of, you know, being able to go after what we, you know, what we think is important. And that's how, I don't like the word divided. That's how we're not united, if that makes sense. Because on the other side, those subjugationists, those Platonists, those who are looking to enslave the world, and they're coming after America right now, they are united. They accept all the little problems with their guy, their gal. It doesn't matter because they're all on the same sheet. It's all about taking us around the woodshed, as I kind of alluded to earlier, and giving us the chains of subjugation to government. They are looking to enslave us. So, with that, I kind of wanted to get into this dialogue about what the heck is going on. I mean, I listen to the, and I'll go back to the fanatics. I hear these people, oh man, Trump is so ahead of the game. He's five steps ahead of them. Every time they think they're going to do this, he's already, you know, got that fixed. I mean, he's just so, like, he's clairvoyant. I mean, it's almost like Masonic, if you understand what I'm saying. And I'm going, wow. I mean, you know, he's just, he puts his pants on one leg at a time, just like you, right? So let me kind of get back to where I believe all of us, those who believe in liberty, where we really need to be grounded and or based. And that is really when we start looking at the founding of this republic. I can't tell you how many people I have had engaging conversations with that I have, you know, tried to get them to see, you know, the simplicity of the Constitution. And it always comes down to, no, it's far more complicated than that. I can't accept simplicity. And I'm going, wow, really? I think Madison did a great job in understanding what he was inspired to do and in creating a government that even the most moronic people, such as us, could actually operate. I think it was divine providence that they put the Constitution into a contract form the way they did, so that it was black and white. The only way anything can change what the government is able to do is via an amendment. The only way the government can obtain greater jurisdiction other than those few things that are amended, or I should say enumerated in the Constitution, is an amendment. It's really that simple. And as I talk to some of these, I'll call them good conservatives, they just get wrapped around the axle with, no, there's this case law and there's this precedence. I go, no, that's the problem. There isn't, and you're clinging on to it. And my friends, if you have that paradigm, it's a real faux pas when a host like myself insults their audience. But if you have that paradigm, then you're wrong. If you read the ratification debates, if you read the definitions of how they describe, and I've read them here on this show, so if you're just tuning in, please be patient. We'll get to them. I will read them again. And when you hear and read what Madison, Nicholas, what Iredell, what Wilson, what all of these great men were saying, is that we have a locked down constitution compact. As Iredell puts it, it's just like a power of attorney. This is not a general power of attorney. It's a very specified power of attorney that we've given to the general government. And so the whole point is that we as Republicans, we as those people who want to see us get back to, you know, the Make America Great or Make America Great Once and For All, those of us that want to get back there, you have to get this through your brain housing group, as we called it in the Marine Corps. You have to start understanding this simple principle. It's a contract. There's only one way to change the contract, and that is through the Article 5 process. Now, I have had my share of dealing with what I'll call, you know, conservatives, good patriots, that, you know, believe that we're doing some things wrong here, but they embrace this concept that from the Civil War and the exigencies that were supposedly injected into the Civil War. Because you got to remember, when the South seceded, where did they attack? Where did the South go first? I mean, think about it. Washington, D.C. was right there in Virginia, and Virginia was a secessionist state, a good part of it. Where was the capital? Where was the capital for the Confederacy? Richmond. Richmond, Virginia. Interesting, right? But they didn't attack Washington, D.C. because they weren't trying to take control. See, the concept of a civil war is where there are two factions or one faction that is trying to take control of the current government. That was not what happened in the Civil War. What happened was the South said, you guys, you know, play your own game. We're taking our ball and going home. And we're just going to divide and we're not going to be a part of this union anymore. They were exercising the fundamental principles within the laws of nations that when a contract or treaty has been violated, regardless of how minute or how great, either way, all parties have the option, and they don't have to, it just could be one party out of 50, but they have the option to walk away and say, look, what you've done has been so egregious that we cannot stand to allow you to do this anymore. We're going to leave and no longer participate in this union. And so that's what the South did. They actually left. And if you look at the battle maps of where all the battles of the South, how come there was no great battle in the Civil War in Massachusetts or New York? They were all in the South. And so I want to be clear, because you've probably heard me say this before. I actually supported the emancipation. I supported the concept. Now, there was only really one way of doing this. The South opened the door, though. The only way was to move forward with a constitutional amendment to ending slavery. They should never have maintained slavery when they established this new constitutional republic. Never. What they should have done, and that's what the 10 of the states out of the 13, and I've said this many a times before, so I'll just breeze over this. 10 of the 13 states demanded that they get rid of slavery. It was three states that held them at bay and said, look, we will leave and, you know, not be a part of this union. As far as I'm concerned, they should have let them go, because there was Spain to the south of them and there was France and England that was ready to harass them and or try to woo them into becoming, you know, part of them and a cabal to come against us. And that wouldn't have boded well, because if you look at how the southern states were, the majority of the population there were slaves, or I should say a good percentage of the population there were slaves. So putting it into context, they wouldn't have done well, because they would have had instantly, you know, revolutionary rebellious fighters, i.e. the slaves, to quickly help undo what they were doing. So they were in a position of a no-win. They would have come back crawling to the states, or I should say to the Union, and go, okay, well, we sure made a mistake here. And I am telling you that even though when they formed the Constitution that the Eli Whitney, the cotton gin, even though that hadn't been invented yet, when it got invented, it still would not have been able to maintain slavery. I truly believe that it would have taken just a matter of a few months to a year with those states being in the position that they were, because what did England do when they were when we were starting to push back against Britain and their tyranny? King George, because if you read the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson spoke about this. The King of England attempted to create a coup or a revolution by arming and inciting and helping to educate the slaves. I forget which state. I think it might have been Virginia or the Virginia or the Carolinas. But either way, there was a little insurrection that occurred by the slaves at that, you know, prior to the Declaration of Independence that says, hey, you know, you even tried to do this to us. And there's no doubt in my mind that that's exactly what the Union would have done with the slaves in the South and got them to rebel. But anywho, it was a bad decision, and I will cover more of this when we get back from the break. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TALK-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
I don't think there's any doubt. I think the evidence is overwhelming when one looks at the framers, these men who created this system, that they were men of faith. I just don't believe they had enough faith to challenge the paradigm shift required in abolishing slavery. And I think that there was too much approbation, too much probably even analysis and thinking we needed these three states. Nevertheless, what they did was they put us on a course that was destined to create a division and or a secession. Now, keep in mind, moving forward, that the Constitution started getting violated pretty quickly. It was, I believe, in the 30s when the Missouri Compromise came, 1830s when the Missouri Compromise came out, which is the antithesis of the founding principles when you dictate to a state that it has to be a slave state. I mean, a state should be able, as a sovereign and independent state, should be able to decide what it's going to be. And the southern states started realizing that there weren't a lot of states that wanted to stand up as a slave state. So they decided, well, we're going to force this upon people. That is the subjugationist, the Platonist, the statist mentality, and those who support those types of ideas, like the Democrats, the secular progressives, they want to inflict upon you their what they believe is best for society. They don't care. You have to do these things, and the ends always justify the means. And so that's how you could see how the Democrats, the Ku Klux Klan, and all of those in historical context, why and how, you know, we got into the mess that we got into, and how they started violating the Constitution, with the Missouri Compromise being one of those. Another thing that they were compromising was the support of the militia, and they started instituting standing armies because, well, the militia was only designed to support the states. They had these things called territories, and, oh, there was French and other harassers and the English, and so they started creating standing armies. They started ignoring the militia so that when the Civil War did come about, it wasn't really fought with the militia. Now, they tried to use the militia, but, you know, here are these guys that are supposed to protect their states in the North from an insurgency and or rebellion, but there was nobody trying to attack their homes. They actually had to go down there and attack these other guys' homes. And that flew in the face of the concept of the militia. And so the militia, actually, because it was the only instrument, and it was brilliant that that was the instrument that was given us, was not the instrument that they could use to marshal their war. I tell you, and I'm on record for this, what should have happened was Lincoln should have allowed the Southern states to secede. Then he should have used the Monroe Doctrine to say, as a moral and just nation, we are going to combat slavery around the world, or at least in our hemisphere, and we're going to start with our little continent right here. And so, and then marched, and I have no doubt, because if you look at from the Emancipation Proclamation forward, they won all the battles. The problem was that they were trying to go after the South for the first 2 years over economic, you know, tyranny and so forth. And there was a lot of people with their heart in going and fighting that. So why am I even going down this path? The whole point was that if you understand how they started violating and how they declared martial law, which was contingent upon the militia being involved, and now that the militia wasn't involved, everything that led up to the standing up of corporations, the creation of all of these constitutional violations were all a part of previous other violations of the Constitution, such as even martial law. And so if you understand that we're in a situation where we have this pile of unconstitutional government from corporations all the way down, then you can understand the importance of having to go through everything with a fine-tooth comb and say, okay, what is really supposed to be here and what's not? Because some of it's even dovetailed and or disguised as something that seems like a good thing, or maybe it is a part of the Constitution, but really it's not. And so that is why the audit is designed to go through, and the simplicity of this whole concept is really, if you understand that there is one process and only one process for the federal government to do something, the states have to delegate that power to them. So there has to be an amendment to the Constitution for them to be able to do that. The only other way for them to assume a new role, responsibility, and power is through a treaty. But when it comes down to, so let's go into the Western lands real quick. The federal government is operating lands that are well outside the boundaries of the Constitution that allows them for the possession of property, for ecological reasons, for reservations for indigenous people, whether that be, you know, in Alaska or, you know, around in the Western states and so forth. There is nothing in the Constitution that granted them that. Now, could they get a treaty to actually create that? Well, no, because that treaty would have to be with the states, because the states are the independent and sovereign power. Or had they had a constitutionally ratified treaty, and when I say constitutionally ratified treaty, that means that 2/3 of the Senate had to vote in support of that treaty. there were so many little treaties that they were doing with the different Indian tribes that they were dealing with. I don't think that any of them actually went to the Senate for voting because they would have been too busy voting on this little change to the treaty and that little change to the treaty and so forth. And what I believe they did was the biggest mistake that they could have made was to abdicate their responsibility down to, you know, generals or to the State Department or at that point in time, the Department Home, I think is what they called it. And that was the beginning or the precursor of the Department of Interior in 1849. All this being said is as you look at the simplicity, it is really this simple, folks. Did they follow the Article 5 process in granting this power to the federal government or the ability to maintain property that's not there? If it is not enumerated and there is no amendment, it is unconstitutional. I don't think that there's a lot of things. And when I went through last week, the, you know, I identified well over 600 different agencies, departments, and or offices that are a part of the federal government, from, you know, scholarships, things that are well outside the boundaries of the Constitution and are consuming millions of dollars. And they say, oh, it's only millions of dollars in the magnitude of the trillions we're spending. It all makes a violation makes it a violation. And even if it's a penny too much, period. And so it's all about the required process, whether it was followed or not, period. End of story. And that is the beauty and the simplicity of this whole concept. Was the letter of the law followed or not? So what I'm really trying to tell you is that in dealing with these people with these paradigms of, oh, well, this jurisdiction has been usurped and we have to stay within the jurisdiction of this. No, we don't. The states and the state legislators are the sovereigns and they have the authority to actually stand up because there is nothing in the Constitution that has taken that away from them. They have the ability to stand up and rectify all of these problems that we're dealing with. Wow, is that it? And as I try to tell people, this is so historic because, like I said, we're able to win a revolution without ever having to fire another shot. I mean, the good Lord blessed us with a system and a government that allows us to actually get this far misaligned where we don't have to go through a real civil war. Oh, well, bottom line is, if you violated the Constitution, then what you're doing is unconstitutional. And there are processes that we can actually, and we, as I've talked to some people, well, you got to have, you know, if you don't have force, then you can't go after them. There are two mechanisms of force, and I've talked about them before. One is treason. The states have the power to charge their people with treason. And even more perfectly, if you look at the Civil War, the 14th Amendment, Section 3 gives the states teeth to be able to keep people from being able to run on, you know, on a ticket. So in other words, imagine this. Let's say your congressperson or, you know, unfortunately, senators are still general elections until we're done with the audit. But let's say your senator is a real hack and a communist. Let's say you have Oso the communist as your representative, and she's in a red state, but she happens to be in a very blue district. Okay, well, that red state, once they're on board with this, can actually start, not even start, but all they have to do is apply Section 3 of the 14th Amendment and say, sorry, you're violating, now that they're calling for the audit, and you've got all these states that are in the audit process, they can actually make it impossible for anybody in Congress that is wanting to, you know, run for office, because every 2 years they have to run, and keep them from being able to serve as a public servant anymore, because Section 3 of the 14th Amendment allows the states to do that. So now, is the federal government going to come in with the military and actually print ballots and say, you have to make this person eligible? No. And so we can go down this path of, Congress being able to take away those disabilities. But that becomes a very self-serving ice cream cone when you say, you may be able to take away our disability, but we can lick ourselves right back into our positions. What? Really? I don't think that was the spirit of the law. And so, but that would be something that I think the states could actually take advantage of. We'll be right back after this.
Folks, Red State Talk Radio has brought back its monthly newsletter. I know everyone gets a lot of emails, but this is not a daily or weekly newsletter. It's a monthly newsletter. So you will not be overwhelmed with a plethora of emails from Red State Talk Radio. Come on, it's only once a month. I'll be contributing a constitutional perspective to one of the current issues to help everyone see an alternative perspective, or what I believe would be a framer's perspective regarding the issue to help us maintain a constitutional paradigm. I will also provide information regarding a significant historical context to the time of year so that we can remember our history, so we will not be doomed to repeat the inevitable failings from forgetting our past and origins. Just go to Red State Talk Radio and sign up for the newsletter. This way you can get a focused view of what is going on in the Republic as well as what is going on at Red State Talk Radio. Thank you.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. And so I know I've kind of covered this before, but if you understand the 1-2 punch here, the first punch that the state would do is they would ban these public servants from being able to hold office. If the federal government says that we don't care, we're going to vote these people back in, it requires, first off, 2/3 of both houses to let these people back in. Secondly, what do you think is going to happen within that state when all of a sudden, especially because we're talking about a red state here, predominantly a red state. So what is going to happen when all of a sudden these the federal government is going to ram down your throat in your state that you have to let this person run and represent you? It's almost like, you know, telling you that, you know, this person is above the law and we're going to protect them so that you can have, we can maintain this corrupt politician in this seat. I don't believe the people of the state, that goes into Madison's perspective, that the affinity for government within the state would be towards the state rather than the federal government, because people will recognize that the federal government has far deeper and far more maniacal intentions and machinations in what they are doing. And so people would start rejecting this collectivism and this paradigm that would be coming from Washington. So I truly believe that that would be the first step. Now, the next step would be, because there's nothing Washington can do, if all of a sudden the state says, okay, if you're going to force this person to be on our ballots, we're charging this person with treason, and therefore they won't be allowed to be elected at this point in time. And there you go. So the if you want to call it the Trump card, the Trump card is the treason, and the states will be able to actually hold back
bad politicians who are deliberately violating the Constitution. Don't give me the idea and the paradigm that, oh, we have to be at a state of war or a declared state of war. We have been at war, an ideological war, in trying to take over our Constitution for well over a century. And because there is really no defined country that we are, you know, we can declare war against, then it is an ideological war. And anybody that says we can't have an enemy, then, you know, I'm just saying their argument has no base. They have no substantial support in that argument. And clearly, the states would be able to step forward and do this. So anyway, I'm not sure if you noticed, and what I want to do, because I was going to get into marketing today, and I'll probably just do this tomorrow too, because I've already gone through the whole show in talking about the fanatics and the obstructionists and so forth. So let me get into some what I think is really important information. I'm not sure if you knew this, but a lot of military bases have been compromised. And as a matter of fact, there's articles out there that are showing you where these bases are around the world. And I'm not talking about just, you know, all the bases around the world, but these are U.S. bases with regards to the mission as well being exposed or compromised by Google. So why is it that you would think that all of a sudden Google would accidentally expose all of our U.S. bases? Now, who would think that this would be a good thing to do? Now, you got to remember that Google, as well as some of these other tech companies, if you didn't know, they've been in the tank for the deep state a long time. They've been working with the likes of China in trying to create Big Brother systems, in trying to help censor information and or propagate misinformation. And now, surprise, surprise, Google has exposed some very sensitive bases of the United States. This kind of goes down to the fact of why was Google allowed to be able to collect these images and so forth. Don't think that they should have been able to, and they have been, however you want to put it, they've been able to get down this path to where now they can act as an enemy to the United States. And it's just like, just like Snowden, and I told you I wanted to get into this, so I'll take a minute really quick. There is a problem with the system, because what do you do when you realize that the fundamental Constitution is being violated by our intelligence agencies? Who do you go to in identifying these problems? The problem is that the states are the ones that you're supposed to go to, but they're not in the process. They don't have anybody, they don't have SCIFs or any mechanism whatsoever for a person to be able to go whistleblow on an intelligence agency, on a contractor, or on the government in a general sense that this, I perceive this as a violation. They should be able to walk into the capital of any state and be able to blow the whistle on the federal government. Why the states? Because it is the states that are supposed to keep the federal government in check, when the federal government itself is not keeping itself in check and they're working together to undermine the Republic and the Constitution. That's precisely why Jefferson did and Madison did exactly what they were doing, because they were overstepping their bounds, united as an enemy of the Constitution. And so what should happen is that when things are getting compromised for a whistleblower system, that needs to go to the states so that the states can all of a sudden have the, you know, it's like the parents, you know, parent conference, you know, sitting down with your spouse and saying, okay, well, Johnny did this. Now, what are we going to do about it? And there you go. So that it forces the dialogue amongst the 50 states to say, you know what, this is wrong. They shouldn't be doing this. Snowden was not a hero. He did expose a lot of problems, but he should never have exposed, because some of the stuff that we were doing were legitimate missions within the intelligence community. The violations of the Constitution is another thing. But he exposed processes and resources and so forth that he should never have exposed. He is not a hero. Now, had he gone to a state legislator that was a true constitutionalist, then I would probably be going, okay, he is a hero because he exposed it that way. But what he did was he gave it to the news and he gave it to, foreign entities. So now that they know, and that's how everybody's found out, oh, yeah, we've been spying on all these other people. Well, to be honest, I mean, no surprise, we have an intelligence agency that's pretty active in monitoring everybody that is, you know, not a U.S. citizen, or at least supposedly not supposed to. But anyway, I digress. The whole point is that the tech companies and Google should be, severely punished for what has happened in exposing these bases, period. They should be shut down. Google Earth should be, you know, should literally be wiped out and no longer available. And end of story. I mean, it's that simple. I do not believe it's one thing for a foreign national government to have their own satellite systems and be able to do whatever they want to do. But when it's a U.S. tech-based company that is actually getting into, because that's an intelligence discipline, and they're doing that and exposing things like this, then, you know, I'm sorry, you can't be trusted anymore. And they have to shut that stuff down, period. Now, another thing, and I've got 2 minutes to talk about this, there's land being seized in regards to the wall and the border. But I don't think anybody's really brought up the obvious question here. Why was this land abutting a foreign border to Mexico even sold to a private individual? I mean, the federal government, general government, has a constitutional role of having access to that entire border. That is theirs. They have the responsibility of maintaining and controlling that border. So why is it that these people were actually sold property that actually was a part of the border? Are you kidding me? What the heck? Who was responsible for that? Because that person ought to be spanked. Was it the state that allowed that sale to go through? Or was the federal? It's all about the Benjamins, right? Oh, well, we're going to make some money and these people want to buy it. And shoot, it's out in the middle of nowhere. So let's make some money on it. And then we can put property tax on it as well. Are you kidding? That land, we call it easements. But it's a constitutional easement because the federal government has responsibility of maintaining that border and the integrity of it. And obviously, they haven't been doing a very good job on the integrity side of our borders, if you understand what I'm talking about. And we need to make sure that they have the ability to do this. So this, to me, is almost like if this even gets into the Supreme Court should remand this to say, are you kidding? This is not even a case. The federal government does have, that is their property. That border is their property, not some private citizen, nor is it the property. It's a shared property with the other state on the other side of that. But clearly, this is not private property or corporate property. It's government property. And so with that, I apologize for not being able to do more marketing, but I will do more marketing to hopefully get you involved. I'm G.R. Mobley. I'm Reclaiming the Republic, and I need your help. God bless, and we'll be back. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution.